Welcome to the In Balance podcast. My name is Jim Simon, and I am the Director of Sustainability at Gonzaga University. In Balance animates Gonzaga University's CREATE model for sustainability through interviews and conversations with students, staff, faculty, and community members practicing sustainability on campus and in our region. When I was in school, there was an underlying conversation that my cohort was having about where to look for jobs when we graduated. Many of my friends went into environmental education and habitat restoration. I went into higher education sustainability. Looking back, I think I was one of the only graduates to end up sitting at a desk. Regardless of where we worked or served, what each of us had in common was a concern about selling out, about working for a large corporation, doing work on a very large scale that had the scent of compromise. As I've advanced in my work and my career, I have found this question to be worthy, but a bit tiring. The work of sustainability is necessary, and as more and more consumers ask for it, the bandwidth for greenwashing to have a leg to stand on diminishes. Today, I'm excited to welcome Laura Mark to the podcast. Laura is a 2018 graduate of Gonzaga University. For the past 2 years, Laura has been working with Unilever on supply chain management and procurement work, most recently as an innovation analyst for Sundial Brands, a Unilever company. While at Gonzaga, Laura led Real Food Gonzaga, which advocated for our goal of purchasing 20% real food by 2020. Through Laura's leadership, Gonzaga met this goal last fall. Laura is driven, passionate, and thoughtful in her approach to sustainability, and has been exciting to see her career path in what's largely billed as corporate social responsibility. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you, Jim. It's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me on.
Yeah, glad you're here. You were, I think, one of the first people who listened to this podcast in, I think, the spring and said, "That was good. Keep it up." I think you reached out to me. I remember.
Yeah.
Or no, you reached out to our through Instagram or something.
Yeah, I absolutely love podcasts. And I think it's really great to have more conversations, in, especially in the Gonzaga space around sustainability. And it was really fun getting to listen to a couple of my fellow old classmates and new folks on this podcast so far. So I appreciate being invited on to be one of them.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks for joining me. And you're in New York City and I think Brooklyn, I recall.
Yes. Yeah. And it's so funny because I remember when I was working with you, you'd talk about New York. And when I moved here, you knew the area. You were one of the few people who really knew the area that I was moving to, as opposed to just being New York City. Right. But it's been, I've really enjoyed moving here, even though when I was first moving here, I wasn't sure if I was going to like it or not, or, you know, being away from so much green space, I thought might be difficult, but I've really grown to love what New York has to offer. And a lot of that is the people. So it's been a really cool journey.
That's awesome. So you work for, now I said Unilever, I think when I introduced you as working for them, is that how you say it? Is it Unilever or Unilever?
It depends on where you are. People will say Unilever. A lot of like European folks will say like Unilever, and other people will say Unilever. I think most people in Unilever say Unilever. But
it's like Gonzaga,
it doesn't really matter.
Gonzaga.
I don't think any of us really care, but yeah, I say Unilever.
Good. Do you want to tell me a little bit about your current role there? What you do?
Yeah, definitely. So I work in supply chain. So for those who maybe aren't as familiar with the business space, supply chain are the process of how things get made. How something gets from being, you know, plants in the ground, things in the world, to being a finished product that is in your store, which is a lot of what we talk about in sustainability, how things are sourced, where they're sourced from, the rights of people who are making the products, when you're talking about social sustainability, all that kind of stuff. And a lot of that relates to how we're actually choosing to source those products. And so within supply chain, procurement is the team that really makes those decisions around who are the suppliers that we're working with, how we are actually getting those products. So I work in procurement at Unilever. As you mentioned before, my role title is innovation analyst. So more particularly, I currently work right now with a brand called Sundial. And when they have an innovation, they come to me and say, we want to make this new product. It needs X, Y, and Z new thing. Help us source it. Help us work with the suppliers to figure that out. Which means when we're making new decisions about new materials, I am the first point of contact to provide input, which gives some really interesting opportunities within the sustainability space to ask questions at a point that people maybe don't always ask questions.
That seems really exciting. So it sounds like when there's a new innovation, how often are there changes and kind of updates to products? Because what it makes me think of is, you have, I guess, probably different models. Is innovation making something that's really good better and better and better? Or is it trying to just respond to trends? Is it a little bit of both or?
A little bit of both, yeah. So I have the unique opportunity to work on Sundial, which, as you mentioned before, is a brand under Unilever, but it's a newly integrated brand, and it has sub-brands under it. So Unilever is a big company, so it's a bunch of sub-brands. And one of those sub-brands is Shea Moisture. So within Shea Moisture, a lot of the push for the brand to exist at all was to provide ready access to African American hair care products that are at a reasonable price. And it was a place that there was no innovation. There was little opportunity to have the needs of that community met in a way that they could afford. So a lot of that brand is spurred out of innovation. But just like you asked, that doesn't always mean a brand new product. Sometimes it just means updating a product to better meet consumer needs. And sometimes it also means updating product to better meet our, we call it our Unilever Sustainable Living Plan. So, those updates might look like making minuscule changes to the label so that when it's recycled, it easily is removed and it's more easily recyclable. And those are things that customers might not notice, but it has to go through the whole innovation process in order for that one label to be changed. Same with bottle changes. Right now, we're doing a lot of updates to our packaging to have more recycled material in them. So those kinds of changes also go through a sort of innovation process. So it can be anything from those minuscule changes to, we've never made this product before. It's a brand new thing. So it's anything within that scale. So yeah, very good question.
Like I said, that sounds really neat and really exciting. Could you tell us a little bit about how Gonzaga prepared you for this role? And I think, I imagine you'll touch on this, but you had a chance to work with another large corporation, Sodexo, who serves our community as Zag Dining. Did that help prepare you for your current role?
Definitely. Both of those things, definitely. So my degree that I got at Gonzaga, I got a business degree, but as anyone who is in business at Gonzaga will know, you're supposed to choose concentrations. And so the concentrations that I chose within my degree were operations and supply chain management and sustainability, which was kind of new within our business school when I started doing it. So those were, that was my major. And then my minor, one of my minors was in entrepreneurial leadership. So innovation. So very much my degree is exactly what I'm doing now. But at the same time, I know most people within supply chain don't have a supply chain degree, because Gonzaga is actually one of very few schools that have supply chain degrees. So if anyone is listening to this podcast and they're like, that sounds really interesting, but I went to school for economics, that doesn't mean that you couldn't go into supply chain. So I think the degree that I ended up choosing very much fit my current job. But I will say, I don't think I would have gotten to that degree had I not been doing the things that I did in the Real Food Challenge. So as you mentioned before, I did a lot of work with the Real Food Challenge and Sodexo when I was at Gonzaga. And that all came out of me just seeing something on one of the whiteboards, I think probably in College Hall, that said, are you interested in making our dining hall more sustainable? Come to this meeting. And it ended out being all about the Real Food Challenge and how our school has signed on to this thing and all that kind of stuff. And that led me on this whirlwind journey of learning about Sodexo and their procurement strategies and how, you know, you couldn't just say, we want to make that, you know, meat more sustainable, we want to buy an organic apple. You had to work within the financial system of Sodexo. You had to work within the negotiations and the contracts that already existed. And all of that, and understanding the complexity of those decisions, very much plays into every single day of what I do at Unilever now. So it's awesome. It was a really great experience.
I think I was really proud when we achieved our 20% goal this fall, because I knew that just so many students had participated, and you were certainly one of them. And I think once we achieved that, I think I reached out to you and Angela and others and just said, yeah, look what you did. Like, it's just so cool. So yeah, thanks for sharing your experience. And I know, I think you must have been probably one of the first students to really, you said that you did the sustainability minor?
Yes. Yeah, I did. Yeah,
so I think you were one of the first.
I was, right? One of the first. Yeah. Yeah. I was one of like the first 15, I think, to graduate with it, at least.
You're on the leading edge, Laura.
Well, I mean, someone else did it before me, though. So it helped. Yeah. I only realized I could because they did, right? So, I think it's so awesome. And you mentioning the completion of the 2020, I wasn't even aware until you reached out to me that it had been completed. I knew it was 2020, and so, or getting close to 2020. So I was hoping it would be, but it was just, I think the coolest part of it was that I wasn't even aware that we achieved it, that it had gone on and prospered without me being there. And I think that's always kind of the best feeling when something is able to be achieved that you've previously worked on, that without you there, like that was awesome. I was so, so excited to hear that.
Yeah. I think that was one of the longest lessons for me to learn about student activism when I was a student, is that when you graduate, it continues. And I think there were things in my journey with, you know, sustainability and activism when I was in college that didn't really get figured out, or we didn't achieve the goal until a couple of years after I graduated. But I think the neatest part of all that was realizing that there were people who picked up where you left off that weren't you, and were able to achieve the goal that you set out for. And I try to share that with student leaders all the time, is you need to start thinking about continuity, like who's next, who's going to continue this.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think we've gotten better about that, because there's just continues to be a pipeline of really great, passionate students working on this stuff here at Gonzaga.
So, oh, 100%. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So I think I touched on this a little bit in kind of like my intro and lead up. I think oftentimes large corporations are accused of greenwashing. Have you encountered this in your role, if you feel comfortable talking about that? And then if you have or if you haven't, how do you reconcile that thought about greenwashing? Is it a thing? Do you see it? Is it just a myth?
No, it is not a myth.
I didn't think so.
Yeah, no, it's not a myth. I mean, but I think the thing that was surprising to me, but I think would be even more surprising to the broader sustainability community, is it normally comes from a good place, but just a lack of understanding within the corporate sphere as to how to be sustainable, what sustainability really looks like. So for example, I think one of the ways that I see greenwashing happening all of the time is calling something natural or an ingredient that is really just a very small part of a formula, but is an ingredient that maybe makes the most impact on the fragrance, which makes it seem like it's probably the biggest part of the formula. And I'm talking very specifically about the personal care space. Unilever covers a lot of areas. So that also could be like in a food item, the one ingredient that's called out, but it might make a small dent in terms of the general product. There might be a lot of work to make that one ingredient sustainable. But that doesn't necessarily make the entire item sustainable. And I think that can be something that can be misconstrued often, and something that can be confusing to consumers. But I also think that from a consumer lens, that's a lot of the time what we look for. We look for those call out ingredients of aloe or those are the things that we really care about a lot of the time. And because we maybe don't get as excited about caring about a surfactant or things like that, that sound really scary because they're chemicals, right? Like we want our products to be all natural as sustainability people, but the general population wants their product to work. And Unilever focuses so much on consumers that don't necessarily have a lot of money to spend on a product that to just try out. Sorry, I'm going to pause for just a second so we can get the door. We don't have a lot of room in our budgets to necessarily try out this new thing. So having that call out ingredient to just annotate that we're a company that tries is something that we often do. And it doesn't even start to touch on everything else that is going on behind the scenes. So yeah, that definitely greenwashing does happen, and it's something that we're continuously fighting against. And I think the more and more that we have people in our business that actually understand what sustainability is and understand the work that needs to be done, the more and more that the right things actually do end up getting done, because a lot of it just comes from inner company learnings.
Yeah, a couple things that I thought of while you were kind of sharing was, I wonder if greenwashing would be less of an issue if we had a really common understanding and definition of sustainability.
Yeah.
I think in my work, you put a 10 community members around a table and ask them what sustainability is. They probably have 10 different definitions.
Definitely.
And I think that probably contributes to why greenwashing is a thing in a way, because everyone has a different definition and a different set of values that, say, a company could be pressing up against in a negative way. And then I think the other thing that popped in my mind as you were talking was just the importance of being honest. I remember, I think Patagonia, I'm going to butcher the story, but I think they did some, there was an issue with the wool they were sourcing, I think a few years ago, and it wasn't humane, or it might've been goose down. It was either wool or goose down, and it wasn't humane or something like that. And what Patagonia did, and I remember them doing, was just owning it completely. They basically said, we messed up, we did it wrong, and we're not going to do this again. And we're not going to sell this product until we get it right. Mm-hmm. And I think that integrity is often lacking. I would rather have a big company say, hey, we messed this up. We labeled an item, an ingredient in one of our products as sustainable, but it's not. We're going to take this label that says it's sustainable off our packaging until we fix it. Because we're all human. And that's, I think, that speaks to me that they're trying. I think that's what you said too. Like, we just got to try. And that's what's important.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that is something I'm fighting for every day, because I think I completely agree with you that I think it is better for companies to completely own up and say, here is what we did wrong here. And I think actually a lot of that is just rooted in the fear of talking about failure. So I've actually done quite a bit of work within my internal procurement organization to just talk about failure and not have it be a bad thing, have it be a great thing, have it be a thing that shows that you are wanting and willing to grow and actually want to get to a place that you are doing the right thing as opposed to the wrong thing. And I think sometimes it's not so clear what is the right, what is the wrong thing, you know? And I think that's where the complication comes so much in the sustainability space, because it's not necessarily common knowledge all the time as to like what the most sustainable thing to do is. Because you might think it's the most sustainable to get a recycled packaging made, but if that recycled packaging is coming from China and you could get something that's not recycled but is made 20 minutes away, what ends up being more sustainable, right? And are you even asking those questions? I think that's the broader thing. And those conversations only tend to happen when someone who understands sustainability but is not condemning of those around them is in a corporate space, who opens the door for those conversations and for folks to say, hey, I don't know, but what are your thoughts on this? And I now have people coming to me being like, I know you're, because I'm a part of our sustainability pillar within procurement. And so people say, I know you're on the sustainability pillar, which I will say is a lot like a club. There are clubs in work organizations, which shocked me, but it's pretty much what it is. And then they'll ask my opinion on things. So I think the more that people are there, the less that those conversations seem niche and the more that it's just the common conversation. And I think we're getting there. We have so many awesome people at Unilever who care so deeply. But we also have a lot of people who just are willing to learn, but don't really understand all the time. Mm-hmm. And so that is the space that we're moving towards, but we at least have a corporate, understanding that we are trying to get better with sustainability. We just came out with our goals for the next 10 years because we just finished our goals through 2020, because like everyone else, we set goals to end in 2020. So yeah, I think, I don't know if that answers your question, but.
Yeah, it does. It was, I think naturally partners with that, that attention on the corporate side is a need for, I've been thinking as you've been talking, kind of consumer grace, because I think consumers need or could be invited to be a little more forgiving and not immediately going to like cancel culture. You did this and you didn't tell us, we're done with you. Instead, it's like, yeah. Oh, they made a mistake and they owned it. I'm going to continue to support them. Maybe not in this specific way until they fix this thing. But mm-hmm. I'm not going to give up on them because they're trying as hard as they can. And I think,
yeah.
I hope that type of mindset, grows. I think yeah. our current climate of life and politics and such is not conducive to that necessarily, unfortunately, but mm-hmm. hopefully it kind of transcends that.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And I think there are so many things that I learned from being in the corporate space about sustainability that I just would not have been aware of had I not worked in a corporate space. For example, I have now learned that of all of the plastic, all of the glass, all of the different packaging components you could have, people who are sustainable typically lean towards glass, right? They're like, well, glass is not plastic, so it's more sustainable. Or aluminum, but aluminum doesn't tend to be in a lot, many personal care products. So it tends to be glass or plastic, mm-hmm. but there's different kinds of plastic. And glass actually makes no money for recycling plants. It loses them money. So I've learned so much about the types of plastic, and it's actually, if we wanted to be the most sustainable with our packaging, we would just have one type of plastic that we used for everything that wouldn't even have to go through a sorter, could clearly be easily reused. Because right now the most difficult part of reusing is just different colors mixing together and customers not getting that perfect looking product that they're looking for. So if you're looking at a shelf and a clear bottle looks maybe a little bit gray, that's probably because it's using recycled plastic. And people, especially in the sustainability space, like things to look, you know, really nice, right? Like, and that's a fear that we have all the time in corporate spaces, which has been so ironic to me. But yeah, I think it's interesting because we definitely, there's room for customer grace, but I think there's also things that as a company, we should be teaching to consumers, which I think we try and do sometimes, but because we have a big corporate and then many, many, many brands, it sometimes gets a little bit lost how to do that. And so definitely another thing I really am excited to continue working with Unilever on. Yeah.
That's a good segue. I think to my next question is just, what do you think is next in your work? How do you think COVID-19 and the recent and much needed attention to Black, Indigenous and people of color communities will have an impact? How do you think those things are going to impact your work?
Well, it already has impacted my work dramatically. So I work in the personal care space. I joked before, because I used to work at Boeing, and I joked that, you know, if you did something wrong at Boeing, you might kill someone. But if you do something wrong in personal care, someone might not get the right hair care product, or their hair might turn green, right? But I think COVID has proven to me how serious hygiene can be. Never have we ever seen people care so much about hand washing. And I personally have been working on Shea Moisture's hand sanitizer that recently launched, which obviously is a big, you know, profit opportunity, but it's also, we donated a lot to local healthcare and also workers at factories and plants to make sure that the people that we call essential workers actually are taken care of as if they are essential to us. And I think beyond that, also working in a brand that was founded by an African American family, I've seen that conversation be shaped in really interesting ways, because Shea Moisture, during the very start of COVID, saw this as a huge issue for African American entrepreneurs. And a big focus of the brand is giving back to the community. And so a relief fund was created for African American entrepreneurs to continue to promote Black excellence. So was really awesome to see that. But I think when the Black Lives Matter movement really started gaining momentum, and the brands that have already been talking about it, like, I think people all the time are like, Ben and Jerry's is so great, they're talking about this. They're part of Unilever, but you won't notice that every single brand is doing that at Unilever. Shea Moisture was another one that keeps getting highlighted within Unilever. And I think it really targeted and pinpointed how this can't just be one brand's issue, that has to be something that is seen across our brands. And there already is work that is being done. Believe it or not, the greatest proponent from a customer base that we've had is Walmart. They proposed this idea of a supplier diversity program and having a very clear idea, understanding of what percent of our suppliers are companies that are owned by either people of color, women, vets, LGBTQ folks. And that seems like so many things, but it's something that has progressively pushed our company towards making sure that our procurement team is focused not only just on who has the cheapest option, but who also is a supplier that is coming from a community that is historically marginalized for a variety of reasons. So there's work that we've already been doing, and there's work that some brands have been doing, but I think the feeling is now a little bit more communal, and like, this is an issue for all of us to be managing. And I think as someone who cared in this space prior to all of this happening, it's been really amazing to see the openness of community members that I work with at Unilever to having more discussions. And one of members of my leadership team has a leadership conversation every week. And he noticed I was speaking out on certain things. And he said, could you and a couple of other folks who care about this start presenting every week on different resources? And I've had multiple people reach out now saying, oh, I never knew this. Thank you for sharing this resource on this. I shared a resource on Seneca Village, which, for those who don't know on the podcast, is an area of Central Park that previously was a very prospering African American community that was completely wiped out in the creation of Central Park, which is a park that many members of my work community live near. So, and that's not something everyone knew. So I think this has changed because more people at my workspace are willing to have these conversations, and that hasn't been going away. So I'm hoping that we continue to not let it go away.
Thank you. Thanks for being that voice, in your work and for sustainability and for people whose voices aren't always elevated to the level they should be elevated to. Yeah. Thank you.
And we still have work to do, obviously.
Yeah, like, for sure. Yeah, there's so much work to do.
All of the time. Yeah. And that's one of the most exciting things about working at Unilever. I'm not coming to a company that I already think is perfect. I'm going into a company that I believe has the opportunity to be better. And I wholeheartedly believe I can help make it better. So I think entering into an organization or a space with that mentality is important.
Did you have anything else you wanted to add, Laura?
As my own personal call to sustainability folks, don't be afraid of corporate spaces. I was so often discouraged or looked down upon when I went to sustainability conferences or within just even sustainability friend groups. They said I could never do that out of just personal moral values, that they could never be a part of that corporation. And I understand that. And if that is genuinely your perspective, I respect going into something else. But there is so much work to be done in corporate organizations. And at many organizations, an exorbitant amount of desire for it to be done, but a lack of understanding as to how to do it, or what are the medium steps, the small steps that it takes to get there. And if you enter into an organization with a vision to be, you know, the person that actually helps to make those sustainability steps happen, you will find comrades in that. As long as you choose an organization that at least has an inkling of it, right? Like at least has that bit of desire there. So, I mean, as a member of Gonzaga, go and set the world on fire. The very Ignatian thought, and one I've always stuck with.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Laura, for joining us today. I really appreciate you being on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jim. I always love chatting with you, and it's always great having our little check-ins, but this was awesome as well.
Likewise. Thanks for listening to the In Balance podcast. In Balance can be found at www.gonzaga.edu/podcasts. Take a listen and pass it on to a friend or colleague. Check back soon for our next episode, where we'll continue to explore the richness of the CREATE model as it is lived out at Gonzaga University and our broader community. Especially in this hyper-digital time, follow us on social media via @ZagsGoGreen. We are still not on TikTok.